Hi, my name is Mike Gibb, and I run AccountsRecovery.net. I'm excited to bring you today's webinar on one of my favorite topics, data. Data is driving more and more decisions at collection agencies, and I thought it'd be a good time to talk to some experts about how they are using data now and how they plan on using it in the future. This webinar is being generously sponsored by MicroBuilt. You'll get the chance to hear more about the company a little later in our program. First, I wanted to take a couple of minutes and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, including the Daily Digest email newsletter and the Getting to Know weekly profile, as well as hosts webinars and delivers information across a multitude of communication channels. For example, the site has launched 3 podcasts in the past 2 months, with more on the horizon. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope everyone will spend a few minutes every day checking out what the site has to offer. Let me tell you a little bit now about today's speakers. Sophie Benbenek is the head of data science at TrueAccord, a fintech startup working to reimagine debt collection for the customer-focused digital age. Sophie developed and designed TrueAccord's machine learning-based decision engine now oversees TrueAccord's data initiatives across the company. Her analysis on internet usage trends in China earned her honors from the University of Chicago, where she holds a BA in political science and East Asian studies. Jacob Corlian is the chairman and CEO of Capital Collection Management, which is located in Syracuse, New York. He also serves as vice president and education chairman for the New York State Collectors Association. Jacob has been in the debt collection industry for 10 years and has received the Professional Collection Specialist, Credit and Collection Compliance Professional, and Scholar designation through ACA International. Mike Hiller is the Vice President of Collections for American Profit Recovery. He joined the company more than a decade ago as an entry-level employee. He is a licensed collection manager in Michigan and serves as a subject matter expert for the State Department of Licensing and Regulatory Affairs. Michael Loggis is the president and chief financial officer of Delta Outsource Group. Michael spent more than 2 decades in collections and management roles and is responsible for all billing, collections, and accounting functions at Delta. He has also managed credit and collection staffs in multiple locations and has managed portfolios of $500 million. He has also achieved a Lean Six Sigma Green Belt certification. The format for today's webinar will be a discussion moderated by me. We encourage everyone to submit questions, and we'll get to them when the discussion is concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. Before we launch into the discussion, two other housekeeping items. The first, today's webinar is being recorded and will be made available on accountsrecovery.net in the near future. And finally, let me read the following disclaimer. This information is not intended to be legal advice and may not be used as legal advice. Every effort has been made to assure this information is up to date. It is not intended to be a full and exhaustive explanation of the law in any area, nor should it be used to replace the advice of your own legal counsel. Any opinions expressed are the opinions of the speaker and not of their organization. And with that, let's begin today's discussion. Mike Hiller, let's start with you. Give you the honor of the first question. Let's talk about what areas data and statistics you think are overlooked within collection agencies.
Thanks, Mike. So the 500 foot view is really a question, and I would say whenever possible, are you making data driven decisions at work? To me, this is what the moneyballization of collections really means. And my fear is, and there's an opportunity in this fear, my fear is it's being overlooked in most places within shops in the industry by and large. I don't think a lot of decision making based on the conversations I have are being made based on data. So I think it's overlooked from top to bottom pretty much everywhere.
Is that, do you think, a situation where it's just because they haven't sort of built it into their decision-making process, or is it more of a situation where they don't understand what's out there and available to them?
I mean, it could be a combination. Again, I think we're, in the grand scheme of things, a fairly new industry who's been slow to mature. And I think compliance, a little foreshadowing, I think compliance is really the, you know, one of the catalysts behind us growing up a little bit. And growing up a little bit means more statistics-driven decisions, not just as far as compliance is concerned, but, you know, taking the money that we spend on compliance and seeing where it could be used elsewhere.
Jake, let me ask you, would you agree with that assessment that Mike gave, that you think that data is really sort of being overlooked on a fairly large scale across collection agencies, you know, of all shapes and sizes?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that point. I know that, you know, for, you know, given my company as an example, we're, you know, a smaller agency, relatively, you know, new. So we're still, you know, figuring out what we want to look at and how we want to see it, and then where we can pull the data from and create it. On the compliance side, I think it's going to be, you know, you're going to see big data in the compliance side a lot, as well as in creating and building collector efficiencies throughout throughout the collections process.
Excellent. Michael, let's circle back to you and ask you the same question. I mean, do you think, and let me ask you sort of specific to your organization, are there areas where you think that the company could be using data a little bit better?
Yeah, I think from Delta's perspective, and again, a small agency, we've been slow to embrace it. But this year so far, we've really embraced using data to help drive decisions and to kickstart conversations. And then an example I'll give you is, you know, in a management discussion, you'll have managers saying that particular collectors or group of collectors might be good with a client or type of business. And then when you go in and look at the numbers and you show them the numbers that contradict their, I guess, gut feeling or experience or whatever you want to call it, there's a lot of aha moments and there's a lot of questioning the validity of the data. But we're starting to see a bit of a transformation here where people are starting to believe the data that they're being shown and relying on it a little bit more to make decisions. We're not anywhere where we need to be, but we're on our way.
Interesting. Sophie, I saved you for last, because TrueAccord's a company that seems to be driven by data and analysis. So I would expect that there really isn't anywhere, any part of your operation where data is being overlooked, but maybe there is. What do you have anything to add?
I think it's been really interesting to hear from some of my companions on this panel. I would note one thing about data is there's always room for optimization. So I would be really hesitant to ever come out and tell you that there's no way in our product that we could be using data better. That being said, like you said, we are a data-driven platform. So experimentation, machine learning, behavioral analytics, these are all baked into how we go about with doing product development, designing strategy, and things like that. The only place that I've really heard of data being used really intensely from competitors or from other clients is really in scoring. So I generally agree in terms of debt collection as a whole with everyone else that I think in terms of strategy, the industry as a whole is a little behind.
Good. I think we've sort of clearly established that there is room for, as Sophie said, room for optimization and room for improvement. So let's start to maybe identify some of those areas where collection agencies should be looking and should be conducting analysis on a regular basis. So Jake, I want to start with you this time. You know, what are the core data points that your agency is monitoring on a consistent basis?
Yeah, so we're looking at, you know, really on the collector efficiency side, because we're trying to obviously scale with keeping our collection staff as lean as possible. So we're looking at data on their call metrics, how long are they on a call for, how many calls a day are they producing, how many inbound, how many outbound, you know, breaking that down by on average, how long is their talk time per different clients and different market segments that we handle. And then using that to try to help improve our processes on the training side. And we're going to start to wrap in speech analytics into the fold and really dive into that to, you know, further look into, you know, is everybody asking for payment in full every time? Are they missing opportunities? Different things like that.
Michael, let me ask you at your agency, over and above what Jacob mentioned as what he's looking at, are there other data points that you think collection agencies should be monitoring on a consistent basis?
Yeah, one of the ones that we're looking at right now, it's relatively new to us, is first call yield from an efficiency standpoint. How many, you know, or first contact yield, I guess, would be a more accurate description, is how much money are we generating off of our first contact with the consumer? So that's a big one from an efficiency standpoint. Also identifying collectors that seem to be able to do that, and then the average payment size on those first call yields. That's a big one we're focusing on right now in my business.
Is there a particular reason why that's become a more of a focus recently for you?
Really, it's just an efficiency. We're trying to keep our business lean as well and have the right number of collectors, or I guess I would say the optimum number of collectors for our business. And so knowing how much we're collecting on a first contact is important to that. Also, it's going to go into structuring. We're looking at, is it possible to restructure our business and maybe have kind of a front-end, back-end collector approach. So we're looking at that as kind of a refining and optimizing our business.
73%. That's our first contact yield.
Nice.
Yeah, 73%. So you're right. You make a good point, though. You've done the difficult thing, right? You got the person on the phone, and that contact, in fact, the fact that you verified your credit, speaking with the correct person, they know who you are, who you're collecting on behalf of, you know, all that, you know, that contact is a decent predictor of a future outcome. And that future outcome is a payment, you know, in part or in full. What's interesting when we dive into the data, is, you know what a not a good predictor of payment outcome is? Desire for payments. But do you know what that predicts? Complaints. So it's kind of contradictory, right? Because you get the person on the phone, and what's the goal? To collect the bill. But what we find is desire to collect does not predict the outcome you're looking for. It predicts complaints. And so we've kind of turned that on its ear a little bit, that common thought, or, you know, the common nomenclature of, you know, debt collections. You know, so if your goal isn't to collect the bill on the first contact, you know, what is the goal? And I think that's the million-dollar moneyballization question, is, you know, that you guys are going to have to answer on your own. But again, the contact itself predicts the outcome of the payment. The desire to collect does not predict the outcome of the payment. So I just want to kind of throw that out there as a, you know, to mix it up a little bit, because it's pretty interesting to us, because we're debt collectors, right? We collect debts. But really, that's just a function of the duty. You know, really what we are is contact specialists. You know, imagine if plumbers or proctologists were called by their job duties, right? Well, we're called by our job duties, debt collectors. But I'm not so convinced that's our specialty. I think maybe getting the person on the phone is the specialty. And, you know, this is what I mentioned before about predicting complaints and kind of coming out of that realm, because we started with, you know, what predicts complaints, and then we backed into what predicts payments.
That is interesting. At this point, I just want to pause the discussion for a minute and talk a little bit about our sponsor, Microbuilt. For more than 35 years, Microbuilt has been helping businesses assess and manage risk. They were a pioneer in the now exploding alternative credit data space, and as such, have refined its products and services to deliver true business value. Over the years, Microbuilt has invested heavily in acquiring best-in-class data. They've built sophisticated systems for keeping data fresh and accurate and powerful predictive models for making decisions around lending, leasing, collections, and risk management. With Microbuilt, you can customize the products you need and how much you want to spend. And all of its products are provided through a single simple access portal. Whether you're working in originations or debt collection, screening a potential hire or tenant, planning for growth, or keeping up with regulatory requirements, Microbuilt can be your partner, providing the insight and information you need to protect your business, grow your bottom line, and keep your company running smoothly. For more information, please contact Microbuilt at 1-800-884-4747 or visit microbuilt.com, and that's spelled microbuilt.com. Thank you again to Microbuilt for sponsoring today's webinar. And now let's get back to our discussion. So let me ask, Sophie, I probably know what the answer to this question is going to be, but I'm going to ask you anyways, because I'm interested in the discussion. Who should be in charge of managing and analyzing the flow of data within a collection agency operation?
Yeah, so as it sounds like you guessed already, I'm a little biased on this one, but I do really think it's important to create a dedicated team that's going to be focused on data analysis and data management. As I'm sure everybody here is aware, data is really important in collections, not just from a performance perspective, but for reporting and compliance as well. So managing data storage, pipelines, analytical interfaces, reporting, those are all full-time jobs for multiple people, realistically. I do think the longer that companies wait to build out these teams, the harder it's going to be, and honestly, the more risk I think you take on. Especially if you're really trying to do data-driven development, you need people who are not only able to unearth these kind of insights, but you need to figure out how you can expose the data so non-super technical people can have access to it as well. A data-driven company is really about making data-driven decisions, and those decisions can't just be made by a couple people. You need to enable the domain experts, the agents, the product owners, things like that, in order to be able to make decisions about their products and their features using the data instead of just always having one person doing it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Let me ask a follow-up. You say it's going to be harder to start building those teams if you wait longer and more risky. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, so a lot of our data at TrueCord is based on interactions that customers have within our system. The longer you wait to figure out how you're actually going to use that data, what that data actually needs to look like, you're taking on debt, ironically. Data maintenance debt, data pipeline debt. So when you actually want to start building those things out, you're probably going to be relying on whatever you had hacked together before, which is probably going to be something inside Excel or with kind of ad hoc little pipelines here and there. And those are generally risky because they're hard to maintain, they're hard to control. A lot of times, if there are errors in any of them, it can be really hard to find. So if you're not actually taking the time to curate and develop these pipelines and these data storage and the analytics, you're going to end up kind of deep in the hole when you actually want to start going in that direction.
Interesting. Jake, let me circle back to you and get a sense. You know, you said your agency's, you know, on the smaller side, relatively speaking. Can you talk a little bit about how, you know, that, you know, who's responsible for managing data and sort of how it's sort of organized within your operation?
Yeah. So being a smaller agency, I think, you know, if you really were to create a robust, you know, operations analytics team, for some of the agencies, it would be quite difficult, including myself. So I think people, you know, have to, you know, kind of take on some dual roles, but I think it needs to be, you know, more driven from the operation side of the business. So like in our case, I will do a lot of it. We try to, you know, bring in technology partners to kind of help us with different reporting and building, you know, data sets to analyze and look at. And, but I think overall, you know, our goal from our agency perspective is to, you know, bring in a one or two people that we can eventually bring up to speed and dive into this further, because it is, I think, an important part that every agency needs to focus on.
Interesting. Mike, let me circle back to you, Mike Hiller, and ask the same question in terms of managing data and who's in charge at your agency.
You know, it's funny because you ask a philosopher who should be in charge, and 100 times out of 100, they say philosopher, right? So as far as who should be in charge, I mean, you got to have someone who's passionate about probability and passionate about statistics. You know, they might have a graduate degree in IO psychology or mathematics, or they may just have a knack for numbers and a knack for asking the right questions. But if it's an individual or a team, bottom line is they need to be inquisitive and really driven problem solvers.
Interesting. Before Michael Lagos, let me ask you, Mike Hiller mentioned, you know, sort of the somewhat contradictory notion of, you know, desire to pay leading to complaints. You know, in some of the analysis you've done with your data, are there insights that you've been able to uncover that maybe have been a little surprising to you?
As far as the complaint goes, no. We use a speech analytics and we're not utilizing the data that system provides to its maximum. And I think that's one of the areas that we want to focus on moving forward is, you know, I've kind of likened this job to, you know, Jake said the contact or contact agents. I would almost take it one step further, and we're sales agents. You're trying to convince somebody to pay a bill for the money they've already spent. And so what I've found from my experience and some of the analytics, it's also the number of contacts, because sometimes it's, you know, you might have caught the person at the wrong time. And then a different voice can sometimes produce results. Now, the interesting thing is, as we're on an analytics call, we haven't done analytics on that, right? And the, you know, I guess you would call it second voice or second call yield, which is kind of the next step. So that's kind of where we're headed, just to see if there's any value in that. And then as far as the complaint side, I've actually taken a note after Jake mentioned that, because I would like to see how that leads to complaints. So that's going to be a talking point for my team when this call is over.
Let me throw the question out to the rest of the panel. Again, Mike, if you've got any other ones beside what you've mentioned as well, or Jake or Sophie, are there any other insights that you've been able to uncover that have been somewhat surprising or maybe not what you expected?
Yeah, I mean, if you do a lot of data analysis, I think this is a really important piece. I think someone mentioned earlier that a lot of times you can use data to kind of just kick gut instincts in the butt, so to speak. And I think that's really common if you're doing a lot of data analysis. So at TrueCord, we leverage experimentation or statistical hypothesis testing. So every time we launch something new, we compare the new feature versus the control. And as I'm sure you can guess, this introduces a lot of really interesting results. So most recently, we actually added a step to our payment plan selection website that allowed customers to put in their payday when they sign up for a plan. It's an extra step. So we were really concerned that adding this extra step would actually reduce commitments from the website because there's more friction there. We figured that by adding this payday, though, we'd have lower breakage rates because customers would actually be able to set up their plan to take money out of their accounts when they had money in the accounts. So we did find it was successful there, but really interestingly, what we found is that adding that step actually increased commitment rates. So actually getting our customers to put in more effort to sign up for the plan actually increased the likelihood of them finalizing that plan sign up, which I think is really cool and something we would have never known if we hadn't taken that extra step to do the analysis. And I think a couple of you were talking about phone calls. We obviously have a digital first strategy, so it's going to be a little different than some of your agencies, but we've definitely found that phone calls, if done too frequently or for the wrong types of customers, do reduce the likelihood of that customer paying. And I think that's a really interesting finding, and it does go against the grain to a lot of the traditional ways of thinking about debt collection.
It's very interesting as well. So Mike Hiller, let me come back to you and ask the next question. You said that, you know, that maybe not debt collectors, but your contact agents, how can enhanced data analysis help agencies improve contact rates?
So I'm glad you brought up contact rates. So when we look at contact rates in relation to statistically driven outcomes, you know, we're landing more on correlation models. So you've probably seen a correlation matrix or heard of a correlation matrix, pretty basic. But in the idea of a correlation is that things in the broadest possible sense hang together with other things in the broadest possible sense, right? So they're not always, but oftentimes found together, neither of which necessarily predicting the presence of others. So when you call a phone number with, for instance, a higher than average score, a phone score I'm talking about, or a consumer with a higher than average collection score, they're more likely to answer, and I might add, more likely to identify themselves as being the person that you're looking for, as opposed to calling a phone with a low score or a consumer with a low score. It's got lower correlation strength, in other words.
So how many different data points are you looking at when you do your correlation analysis?
Probably, I mean, 20, but obviously we've since, we've whittled down the ones that, no longer are relevant, and we continue to add in things that we think might be, just experimentally to see what comes out in the wash.
Are there, within those 20 data points, are there ones that are maybe more heavily weighted as having an impact on the final outcome than others?
Yeah, so kind of spinning back partially to your previous question about surprises, the best thing that predicts a payment is a payment, right? Seems obvious. And the second of which is going to be a contact with the consumer themselves. But, the third thing and the surprising thing is, now I'm kind of talking about prediction, which is different than correlation, but we'll get there. But the surprising thing was, we found that talking to a nearby, so friend, family member, you name it, third party, actually has the third best predictive outcome for payments.
Any reason why you think that might be true?
So that's what the numbers bear out. And then when you start listening to the calls, what you'll find is, the calls where it's a third party wrong number versus a call where someone says, wrong number, and you ask a follow-up question. So-and-so, are you able to get them a message? If you can text them and have them call me, those types of follow-up questions. Are the ones that bear out the goods, so to speak.
Got it. Michael, let me ask you, we've talked about contact rates. Let's talk about collection rates now. Can you maybe sort of share some ideas or some of your thoughts on how the data you're analyzing can help agencies improve collection rates?
Yeah, I mean, we use average payment for both current and second month. And we do it on an individual collector basis, team basis. We're diving into client specifics as well, because there's going to be certain clients, certain portfolios that we want to drive performance. And by driving the average payment rate, we can increase overall yields. And so that's one of the areas that we're focused from an individual perspective at the collector level, where, and then what we're finding is that with any kind of data analytics, it points you where you need to pay attention, right? And so then we begin to go in and review calls with those collectors that seem to have lower average payments, and we kind of take a training aspect to it and see what they're doing on the call and how they're talking to the consumer and how they're broaching the subject of payment. So that's kind of the area that it drives for us.
Okay. Does, you mentioned sort of looking at it from the collector level, do you look at it from the client level or from the type of debt level as well, from different perspectives?
Both.
No?
Both.
Okay.
I think that's key when you're doing your analysis. If you're seeing a particular client that seems to be lower than the average or even higher than the average, you look at the type of business that it is, right? Is it prime? Is it second? You know, is it credit card? Is it DDA? You know, it just depends on that piece. And then you kind of have those benchmarks, and then you look at those averages and above and below, and then you try to drive performance from those from that perspective. But it also gives you a sense of where you want that business versus the skill set of the collector that's working it.
Got it. Jacob, are you looking at it from those perspectives as well? You know, from the individual collector, the individual client, the type of debt when you're analyzing your data?
Yes. Yeah, I think it's very important to, you know, as you're running a business and trying to, you know, obviously increase profits and increase your margin, I think it's very important to look at both sides of it. So we're, you know, consistently looking at collector performance and efficiencies, and then also looking at, you know, what are our margins and how are our performance per clients as well.
Go ahead, Mike. Did you have something? Okay. Jacob, do you have sort of hard and fast rules or guidelines if a collector falls below a certain level in terms of their, you know, how they're performing, or a client falls below a certain level? I mean, do you really sort of stick to what the data tells you in terms of whether or not to let someone go or make a decision? Or in the end, is there also some sort of qualitative measures that you'll use before making those kinds of decisions, instead of just focusing solely on the data? Jacob, that was for you. Let me repeat it, maybe sort of rephrase it in a different way. We're talking a lot about, looking at data, relying on data. I guess my question was, does the sort of at the end of the day, when it comes time to make a decision, do you just look at the data? I mean, the sort of like the numbers don't lie, they speak for themselves, and you use that to make your final decisions? Or do you use the data just sort of as a piece and look at maybe some sort of qualitative or certain sort of other measures of how that person's performing, or how long you've had that client, for example, before you make a final decision?
I think he dropped off.
Did he?
Sorry about that. My headset hung up on me. So I think I missed part of your follow-up question, but to further dive into what we're looking at on the client side, we're looking at, you know, what type of debt's placed with us, how are we able to perform on that debt, what are our costs associated with going after that debt for that specific client, and then building out data sets to basically further prove, you know, should we continue to work with this client, you know, do we need to increase our fee structures or look at you know, our collector efficiency numbers to see if there's something we need to do in terms of additional training or additional support that we need to bring on. And then on the collector side, kind of a very similar thing, how are collectors performing with different debt types? Are all of our collectors being efficient, looking at the, you know, the call data, looking at their right party contact rates, looking at their promises or payment setup, and kind of combining that into a full efficiency metric for each collector per different debt type that they're working on.
Okay, thanks. Sophie, let me ask you this question, and it's probably going to be somewhat, you know, sacrilegious to ask you, but is there such a thing as too much data? You know, for every piece of information that comes in, for every attempted contact, it's another data point. There's, you know, Mike was talking about correlations. Is it possible to sort of get lost in the data and not be able to kind of pick out what needs to be picked out from your, you know, from an agency's particular database?
So I never think there's such a thing as too much data, but a lot of the job in data science and data analytics is what we call data munging. So it's about actually trying to figure out, of this giant set, what do you actually need? Feature engineering is a huge component of this. Whenever you design a model, you want to figure out what the right features are for the individual thing you're trying to predict. And there's a really important aspect of this as well, especially in industries like debt collection, where you do kind of need to do a gut check on the features you're using and the type of data you're using to try and understand. I think this goes back to some of the conversations we had in the previous webinar on generations, around thinking about why is this feature actually affecting, and do a little bit of root cause analysis to make sure that you're developing a model that's actually predicting the right thing, and isn't accidentally overfitted or using types of data that you don't want to associate your models with.
So how do you do that?
How do we figure out what are the right number of features to use?
Yeah, how do you figure out what are the right number of features to use? You know, how do you sort of attack a root cause analysis to make sure that, you know, what you're, you know, the numbers that or what you're looking at kind of make sense?
So let me try and answer this without going into a statistics lesson here. Some of it is going to be trial and error. Some of it's going to be actually speaking with domain experts. My team works really closely with our product team and our engagement team because they know the most about our customers. And they're usually really good resources for understanding where you might want to start looking. In terms of root cause analysis, that's really going to be about, you should know how your system works. One thing we haven't really talked about that I think is really important is data gives you the ability to actually understand what your customer is doing in your system. And when you can actually develop those maps, the customer journey maps, using data to understand how the customer goes through, it starts to make it a little bit easier to break down what features you might need to use depending on what stage in that process you're focusing your machine learning or analysis on.
Got it. Mike, let me ask you the same question, because we were talking a little bit about this before with respect to the different data points in your correlation analysis and how some are weighted differently. How do you know when you have a correlation versus when you have a coincidence?
Versus when you have causation?
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. So when you talk about contact rates, you know, we have stuck with correlation models because we haven't found a predictive model, but it's not for lack of trying. So we know, or we have good reason to believe, that the correlation approach as far as contact rates is our best approach so far, which of course my hope is that changes, is because we've tried regression analysis, specifically multiple regression analysis, and the results are less than appealing. I mean, the results don't bear out any causal relationship between, you know, the variables in that matrix and the outcomes we're looking for. You know, you've got your model, and then you've got the variables, which is your inputs, and then you've got the outcomes. So our outcomes we're looking at collection rate and collectability rate or recovery rate. In our variables, we're looking at contacts, call duration, age of an account, balance, class of business, those types of things. You know, as far as contact rates as an outcome, we look to the correlation model. But for instance, as far as collection rates or recovery rates, we use more of a predictive approach. And that's because the results have led us there. You know, so for instance, we look at collection rate or recovery rate in relation to statistically driven outcomes. We land on not correlation models, but we're looking at probability and causal inferences. So an example is the regression analysis, right? So simple regression analysis is probability that a particular outcome will occur. Multiple regression is used for the prediction of causal analytics, right? So you want to know what regression analysis is, right?
Yes, I do.
I know you're wondering. So the best way to explain regression analysis is like this. It's a way of mathematically sorting out which variables have the biggest impact on the outcomes that you're looking at. That's all it is. Which variables have the biggest impact on your outcomes? So, you know, you want to know which variables, which factors matter the most. And then you also want to know which variables that you shouldn't maybe be making decisions on too. You know, sometimes what you find in statistics is, you know, is that the things that you expected to be true and are not are just as valuable as the things that you're kind of surprised, you know, came out in the wash.
Just to jump in here really quickly also, sometimes the features that you find that are really useful in this type of regression analysis is sometimes more useful than any type of actual predictive equation you're developing. We recently implemented a piece in our system about predicting the likelihood of plans to fail, so we could take additional steps to help figure out how we can keep them on their plans. But some of the features we found that were really, really significantly correlated with this likelihood of breakage were more valuable than the prediction model itself. And we leverage those in developing content and developing the strategies that we're going to be using on these types of customers.
So let me ask either Sophie or Mike, because both of you have weighed in on this. You know, if I'm a collection agency and I kind of understand, you know, I've been looking at my collection rates, I've been looking at my contact rates, but I want to start to sort of dig deeper and really kind of understand or use the data that's sitting, you know, in my machines, where should I start? You know, what's a good starting point? Where should I get the ball rolling?
So if you want to start, my answer is a little morose, so maybe some cheer would be good.
Sure. So really, truly, if you're trying to do data-driven development, which is a lot of times how I think about this question, the number one thing I would suggest is actually to set up a conversion funnel or pipeline. So like I've talked about a little bit before, this is a key part of data-driven development is understanding how your customers actually flow through your system. So at TrueAccord, this is going to be a little bit different than traditional agencies. We think about email contact rates, engagement on our website, things like that. You guys have talked a little bit about, you know, you want that first RPC, you want that first payment, things like that. But figuring out what that actually looks like and then using your data to figure out how to actually put those numbers in can be really, really useful, because then once you have that set up, you can start doing root cause analysis. So you can understand where the biggest drop-off points are in your system, dig deeper within that across different types of debt, different debt amounts, which is one I haven't heard talked about yet, but it's really important, at least on our platform. Things like that. And then you can start picking away and developing new strategies and developing new processes that'll help increase those key points of failure along the system.
And now for the morose answer.
The first step to recovery, Mike, is admitting you have a problem. Well, actually, the first step is denying you have a problem and then admitting you have a problem. But yeah, you start with collecting data. So you start with collecting a ton of it, data that you're not sure you'll ever use and data that you know you're going to use. But it really is a step before that, and it's how you're collecting that data. So Sophie talked about relying on old technology as a big problem, right? And I see this every time I go to an ACA convention, that this collection software that everyone's peddling, and not to name names, I'll just say all of it, throw it out. Because the collection software that we're using is not collecting data in a way that is useful, by and large. You need a piece of software that is contact management software that can slice and dice all of your data points into much more usable ways. You know, a lot of what we see is these old software systems that they just kept piling stuff on. They're charging a la carte. And I mean, look, the apps that my 4-year-old uses on my phone in many ways are better and newer and more efficient and leaner and more powerful. So why can't we have contact software that can do the same thing, that gives us all of these end results that we're looking at to be able to look at the data in ways that we want to? That's the morose answer, is we need better collection software.
Jacob,
either that or you need to go to in a previous life, I was involved in a project where we were implementing a business intelligence data warehouse, which pulled data from disparate systems that didn't communicate with each other and consolidated it and put it in a format that it could be read. But there's an expense associated with that and implementation, so which is timely or time consuming and draws a lot of resources. So that is an option.
Do you think, Michael, that's been one of the biggest stumbling blocks, is the expense?
Yeah, and it's not just the expense, it's also the resources required to do it. I mean, to have the interior and exterior resources from your organization for that kind of implementation is not easy. Because once you get the data into the business intelligence software, then you've got to spend time designing it to give you the information and the analytics you're looking for. And then also the ongoing maintenance of that, because as your business changes, what you look at is going to change, and you need to be able to, the system needs to be pliable enough that it's relatively simple to move it back and forth. Otherwise, you're looking at an additional expense for updates and changing the data.
So just to respond to that, so not being easy isn't the reason not to do it. And I would say, as far as costs, think about this. How many resources do we use to train new employees in an industry that has really high turnover? So we're spending all this time and energy to train employees on old technology that is not nearly as useful as it should be, only to have them the attrition rate kick in, where they're out the door, we hire more and train more employees on the same old technology. I would like to see the statistics on that.
Very interesting. And also gives me a chance to plug my training webinar, which is coming up on Thursday. So thank you for tossing that softball up in the air. Jacob, let me ask you, do you think it's a lack of resources, or do you think it's something else that's really sort of kept the industry from moving forward faster in adopting a more data-driven approach to collections?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, probably a few different factors. You know, one that we've touched on is kind of where to start. You know, a lot of people might not know where to start, what to look at, you know, where other agencies are, you know, digging into the data. And then once you figure out where to start, you got to figure out what your end goal is and where you want to be and how to connect the dots along the way, working with software that may not, you know, have the reporting tools or be able to give you the data that you want in a clean fashion. And then you got to, you know, put in the resources or bring in people or create a data warehouse to accomplish your, you know, your data analysis goals.
Do you think that there's some sense of, or some sense among collection agency decision makers that there really isn't enough of a return to make that investment?
No, I think it's hard for people who are kind of stuck in their old ways of doing collections and not putting the, you know, not putting the resources into it. I mean, I think the better question is, you know, can you afford not to look into the data and analyze what you have coming in?
Well put. So we've heard, you know, we're not debt collection companies, we're contact companies, we're sales companies, but maybe we're also data analysis companies too. Is that what you know, one takeaway from this?
We should be. I guess the takeaway. I just want to do one last thing. I think one of the benefits of data is eventually once you start gaining these insights, that transitions pretty nicely to automation. Which can then bring some of those expenses down. So for example, at TrueCord, only about 2% of our customers ever actually interact with an engagement team member. But we do see 30 to 50% better performance across some verticals that we work in, just with this fully automated, data-driven decisioning strategy. And so I think when we're talking about data and we're talking about costs, you have to remember that some of the benefit of data is actually driving down costs in other places.
Amen.
We've got just a few minutes left and there are a few questions that have come in. So for anybody who wants to ask submit a question, now is probably your last chance to do so. So start typing. Mike, this is a question for you with regards to the comment you made about the desire to collect, creating complaints. Can you explain a little bit more about what desire to collect is? Is that the collector's motivation or the agency's? How do you measure that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I'm using desire as to desire to collect as, you know, something that we came up with internally. And what I mean by that is that's your only goal or your first goal on that call. And so everything else be damned, you know, this bill is getting collected. And there's a bunch of different variables that we use to put together the criterion, which is desire to collect. So kind of look at that as the, you know, the aggregate, and then there's, you know, a bunch of variables that go into that. And the point I was trying to make there is not that desire to collect predicts complaints, but that it correlates with complaints. And so if you kind of turn that on your ear and look at what are some of the other goals of a initial contact or a follow-up contact, or what can some of the other goals be? And once you start experimenting with something else other than mini Miranda, how much can you pay today, you might be pleasantly surprised.
Just to back this up, we also found very similar results in our own call strategy. And we actually migrated to a targeted phone call strategy only. So all of our phone calls are going to be targeted to a specific thing based on how the customers interacted with our system. And we kind of got rid of those generic collection phone calls altogether.
Awesome.
Another question that's come in is a correlation relationship sufficient to change a collections process?
How strong is the correlation? It can be. It absolutely can be. And I think it's a good starting point is why I mention it. If that question was for me, Mike, I think it's better than using your gut to make decisions and change business practices. It's not as good as a causal model, but there again, causal models are hard to come by. And you definitely need someone who's pretty well steeped, you know, in statistical analysis to be able to pull something like that off, where a correlation matrix, you can Google it and put all the variables in both quadrants. And, you know, you could do that fairly easy. And it's a good primer to getting into statistics.
Here's a question that came in for the entire panel. Is there a regulatory danger in collecting data and using it in a discriminatory manner? I guess it would depend on how the data is being used.
Yeah. And
talking about disparate treatment?
Maybe. Yeah.
What data is being collected is really important. So, for example, at TrueCord, we don't use any data around age, gender, race, anything like that, because those are generally going to be really highly correlated to discriminatory action. But I do think being really cognizant, especially if you're using machine learning, about the possible ethical complications around things you're implementing is important. If you look at Silicon Valley, there are a lot of stories of people who didn't necessarily use these features, but still got like algorithms that reinforce bias and parole and things like that.
Another thing that maybe isn't a protected class explicitly, but maybe implicitly, is demographic material. So I wouldn't say don't use demographics, because a lot of what the collection scoring models are based on is has demographic information in it. What I would say is to avoid the disparate treatment is don't not call and not letter a segment of your population. I would at least send a letter or at least make a phone call, even if they're your lowest scoring accounts, regardless of why they're low scoring. Try to give them the opportunity to pay it is what I'm saying.
Sure.
Maybe don't spend, don't spend the mortgage on it, but spend a little bit.
I would actually also go one step further and say if the data you collect doesn't include those areas that were previously mentioned, it can actually help you avoid that kind of discrimination, because you're basing it off of pure analytics rather than gut, which I think sometimes can lead to that kind of practice.
Yeah, it's important to note, though, that pure analytics can sometimes be just as flawed as gut, especially if you're using a skewed or biased data set to start with.
Right. I think it's important to understand what data set you're using.
Yeah. And I do think somebody in the comments said, but you can use data to find evidence of disparate impact that a company might not be aware of. This is true as well. There are some third parties that TrueCore is actually thinking about working with that can help do this for you. And then again, you don't have to keep that data internally, which can inevitably lead to problems.
Excellent. Well, we've reached the top of the hour, so unfortunately we've run out of time. So I apologize if I didn't get to all the questions, but before I let everyone go, I want to thank Mike, Jacob, Sophie, and Michael for their insights and their time today. This webinar definitely would not have been possible without their participation, because nobody wants to listen to me talk about statistics for an hour. I also want to thank MicroBuilt for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.microbuilt.com to learn more about the company, or call 800-884-4747 for more information. Thank you to everybody who registered and participated today and asked questions. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for more news and more webinars in the very near future. And I hope everyone enjoys the rest of your day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. It was a pleasure.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.